This is Dr. Paul Lee. Welcome to Restoration. This podcast features the fifth cross tie and the fifth beatitude. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Thank you for joining us. We're now at the fifth beatitude, which says, blessed are the merciful, for they will obtain mercy. And I think it's a great time of year to think about mercy and to think about grace, because there's nowhere in the story of God's relationship with his people, as it's laid out in the Bible, that we see God's grace and mercy more powerfully than in the Christmas story. There's nowhere that we see God moving into human history in a way that reveals his grace and his tenderness toward us the way we do in the Christmas story. And his coming to Mary and gaining entrance to her life, that she would let her life be completely capsized and turned around in order to let God have his way in her life. And her willingness to receive the grace of God and to set aside her own agenda was what allowed us to enter into life with God. Ironically, it's kind of the same thing for us, though. We have that same decision that Mary had to make. When we invite God to enter into our existence, we have to take into account that it may upset our plans. It may really rock our world. And for Mary, it meant that she might have been divorced. And in fact, if God hadn't revealed himself powerfully to her intended, to Joseph, his decision was to put her away. Fortunately, God intervened in Joseph's life, and he, like Mary, was willing to set aside his agenda to allow God to have his way. Well, I think for all of us, especially at this time of year, we've all got an agenda going, right? Don't you got places to go and things to do? And sometimes God interrupts it. Sometimes he shows up and asks us to consider a different way. Consider a different path than what we had considered. And for Mary, she was a good Jewish girl, and she wanted to do things God's way. And the idea of being pregnant before she got married was not exactly in the plan for her. But it was exactly in God's plan. And for us, it's a wonderful thing that we celebrate. We celebrate that this woman had a baby before she ever had sex. So it's a great thing. But for her, it was upsetting. And for us, I think when God comes into our domain and he comes into our lives, into our structure, our agenda, our plans, he upsets some things. And he shows up in a way that sometimes we don't expect. One of the things that I think is so telling about the Christmas story is that not only for Mary and Joseph, but for the shepherds and the wise men and for everybody else in that time, the key was whether they saw what God was up to, whether they recognized God when he showed up. And fortunately, Mary did and Joseph did. Fortunately, the shepherds and the wise men did. But there were many people who didn't see Jesus when he showed up on the scene. You know, everybody that walked into that stable and looked at the manger would have seen a baby, right? But it was only those people who were open to seeing that that baby was the Son of God who responded in an appropriate way. And what I'm learning more and more is that my ability to respond appropriately to the people God brings in my life depends on me not just seeing another human being, a baby, a woman, a man, a little child. My ability to respond appropriately depends on my ability to understand that the incarnation went far beyond the manger. What do I mean by that? What I mean is that every day God shows up in our experience in the form of other human beings. How do I know that? Well, Jesus tells us that on the last day, when we are judged, when the sheep are separated from the goats, there is going to be a reckoning. And there's going to be a declaration by Jesus that the goats did not feed him when he was hungry, did not clothe him when he was naked, did not visit him in prison or when he was sick. And they're going to ask a question. By the same token, he's going to ask the sheep, you fed me when I was hungry. He's going to say, you gave me drink when I was thirsty. You clothed me when I was naked. And when I was in prison, you came and visited me. And they're going to ask a question too. Who knows what the question that both the goats and the sheep are going to ask Jesus? Lord, when did we see you? When did we see you hungry, naked, sick, or in prison? When did we see you wanting for anything? When did we see you? And Jesus will say, inasmuch as you did it or did not do it for one of the least of these, you did it or did not do it for me. So the whole thing, the whole question of where we're going to line up to Jesus' left or his right depends on our eyesight, depends on our ability to recognize that the every opportunity that we have to encounter a hurting person, someone who's broken, someone who's hungry, someone who's sick or in prison, we have an opportunity to encounter the baby Jesus. We have an opportunity to do what the wise men and the shepherds did, which is to respond in a way that declares our belief that God is with us. So what does it mean to be merciful? There are two aspects of mercy that I want to focus on tonight. And one of them is an aspect of generosity. And when Jesus is speaking to the goats and the sheep, he's speaking to them about their open-heartedness, about their willingness to give what they have and to share their food, their drink, their clothing, and their time with those who are in need. And so the first aspect of mercy that I think Jesus would want us to engage with this beatitude is to cultivate compassion, to cultivate a heart of openness. And I can tell you, if you get in too big of a hurry this Christmas, checking things off your list and going to parties, you're going to miss some of the opportunities to be compassionate and to share a comforting word, a smile, a tender moment, $20, a visit to someone who is sick or lonely or hurting, and you will miss out on the opportunity to encounter Jesus in the flesh, to encounter that person who really gives you an opportunity to know God. We are all alike. We are all fellow strugglers. And when you come here on Tuesday night, it's a wonderful thing to come here for yourself. In fact, that's the first reason you need to be here. You don't need to be here for your kid, your spouse, your father, mother, your sister, brother. You need to be here for yourself. And when we come to God's table, we need to come hungry for our own nourishment. But we also want to come with a heart of compassion so that whatever bread we receive, we share. We're going to give you a chance in just a little bit to come up and take from this loaf and to eat a symbol of Jesus' life. But there's a fairly big loaf here, and if you want to grab a big enough hunk that you can tear off a piece and share with somebody else, be my guest, because that's what community is all about. It's about sharing what we have. Because Jesus says, if you show mercy, you will be shown mercy. Those who give will receive. And the more you are generous and open-hearted, the more it opens up the flow of God's grace and his mercy to you. The second aspect of mercy is an aspect of forgiveness. And I think for many of us, forgiveness is one of the big sticking places for us in recovery, in spiritual formation, in our growth as humans, because most of us in this room have been deeply injured early on. We have been wounded in ways that for some of us was absolutely devastating. And for those of you who are still suffering the effects of sin that was visited on you in childhood, I have great compassion. But I know that forgiveness brings freedom. That as we begin to open our hearts of mercy toward those who have wounded us, we are going to experience God's grace. We are going to experience more and more as we choose forgiveness over bitterness and judgment. I led a retreat several years ago, and there was a young woman there who had been abused as a child. And it had gotten her on a path of promiscuity and exotic dancing and, you know, a lot of things she had gotten into as a result of the injury in her life. And at a certain point in the retreat, we were talking about how it feels when God doesn't seem to show up for us, when he doesn't seem to come through on his promises. And there were some people there that were like, well, that can't be right. God always comes through. God is always there. And this young woman spoke up and she said, I don't know about you, but if God is a loving father and he has the power to intervene when I was being hurt, I have a hard time with that. I can forgive him for not being there, but he was not there. And of course, it led to a lot of very religious discussion, most of which was unproductive. But at the end of the day, the belief that we have about God's presence is that he is with us. And at that moment, for that young woman who was abused as a child by a family member, all I could say to her was, God was there because he was there in you. Jesus said it very clearly in the passage I referred to before. Whenever it happens, whenever you do to one of the least of these, you do to me. He was there in that moment, in her receiving the pain, the humiliation, the degradation, the abuse that she suffered. How does that help us? Okay, so Jesus hurt too. That helps us because Jesus gives us the power to receive our wounds in the same way that he received his. Now, as a child, we don't know how to do that. We don't know how to have appropriate boundaries. We don't know how to speak out against injustice. We don't know how to forgive. But as we mature and as his life matures in us, he allows us to look back on that time and to realize that even if we're still in pain from those wounds, even if we're still suffering, that we can do as Jesus did on the cross, and we can cry out to God in the words that he used, Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing. Now, when I first contemplated those words on the cross, I thought, well, that's kind of ridiculous because they did know that they were killing an innocent man. Those Pharisees knew that they'd called those false witnesses in. Pilate himself knew that he was an innocent man, and his wife had told him in a dream, God had made it very plain that Jesus was innocent. So these people were doing something they knew was wrong. But when Jesus said, Father, forgive them, they don't know what they're doing, what I believe he meant was they have no idea who they're dealing with. Had no idea who they were really dealing with. And they said to him, well, if God delights in you, if you're the Son of God, then call the angels and come down from heaven. They were daring him to show himself in a way that would be irrefutable. But Jesus would not be seen in that way. He would only be seen by those with eyes to see and ears to hear. And when Mary and the other women beheld Jesus on the cross, they beheld the Son of God. But the others gathered around saw only a pathetic, broken, and beaten man. They didn't behold what was happening. They had no idea of the importance of what was going on. And I would propose to those of you who have looked at your own, the tragedy in your life, and all you've seen is a broken and battered and bruised soul, to look again. Because there's something else there. What Jesus was symbolized for Mary and for the Apostle John and for those few that were there, he was still the light of the world. He was still the Savior, and he was still beautiful in his brokenness. And I want to say that if you have the Spirit of Christ in you tonight, you are beautiful in your brokenness, because you still have the light of the world in you. You are, if we take Jesus at his word, you are the light of the world. Well, some of you are feeling pretty dim tonight, I'm sure. Sometimes I feel dim-witted and I feel like my candles aren't all lit. But some of you are feeling like you don't have much light. And this time of year, when the days are getting shorter and shorter and shorter leading up to Christmas, we feel the darkness closing in. Some of us hugely, because we're reminded of the lack of family. We're reminded of betrayal. We're reminded of hurt or broken promises. We're reminded of the ghosts of Christmas past. And so this is a time of the year when we need light. And some of us are looking in the wrong place. We're looking outside to find that light. And although God will give us signs like he did the wise men that are external to us, what he really wants is for us to go inside, to go in the stable, that humble place, and find the baby. And your body, we're told, is the temple of the Holy Spirit. And some of our bodies are more like stables than palaces, right? They're not much to look at. But in that stable, in that body that you are, there's a manger and there's a child. And if you're willing to take a look, then you can experience the joy of Christmas in you. I have a friend that I've known since we were in high school, and his name is Tim Rushing. And he says, one of the sayings that I love of his, he says, every day is Christmas when your heart is a manger. Every day is Christmas when your heart is a manger. When you open yourself up to God's mercy, he implants his Spirit in you. Just in a similar way that he did with Mary way back when, he comes to live in you. And he comes in a small way, but it's in a way that will grow over time and birth in you some great thing. And what God did for Mary, what he did for Joseph, what he did for those shepherds and the wise men, he wants to do for all of us this Christmas. He wants us to be in awe of his willingness to come in a humble way, into humble lives. And if there's anything that will keep you out of the manger, out of the stable, it's going to be your pride. If there's anything, it's not going to be your sin. It's not going to be your brokenness. It's not going to be your poverty. It's not going to be your station in life, your sex, your weight, your height, your looks. It's not going to be any of that. What could keep you out of the stable is simply your pride. Because you either think you're too good or too bad to be visited by something so wonderful and humble as a baby in a manger. When you were wounded, when you were ignored, whether as a child or as an adult, when you're ridiculed or abused, when you've been neglected or disrespected, violated, taunted, taken advantage of, unnoticed, rejected, abandoned, betrayed, maligned, or discarded, when you're crushed and brokenhearted, confused, discouraged, and distraught, that's when Jesus was there. He wasn't out there next to you with his arm around you, comforting you or telling you it's going to be okay. He wasn't there beating up the bullies or taking your abuser to justice. But he was there inside of you, taking on the pain the way he did on the cross. And if you're willing, the pain that you've suffered, if you release it to him, and if you choose forgiveness the way he did, then that pain will have redemptive value for you the way that the cross did for all of us. The Apostle Paul says, I fill up in my body the suffering of Christ. And when you choose to suffer in God's way, and you choose to forgive, then that suffering changes. It changes the way it impacts you, and it changes the way that you take a stand in the world. I love what I hear from people who've suffered, and I don't know if y'all saw Nick Wojcik when he was here at Woodlands Church, but he's a guy who was born without arms and legs and suffered a great deal because his family prayed for years that God would heal him. And, you know, just they were people of faith, but they were confused. They were frustrated. They were hurt that their son was so deformed and so limited. But as those of you know his testimony, know that he says that he would not, if he could, change it and have a fully functional body, because God has, through the process of transforming his heart, has given him the ability to look on his pain as a gift. Now, some of you are going like, okay, that's never going to happen for me. I'm never going to see pain as a gift. But I can tell you that if you're truly willing, you don't have to, you can't make it happen, but if you're willing, God will transform even your worst moments to his greatest good. For all of us who are engaging this beatitude in a very real way, this beatitude that calls us to be merciful, to be compassionate, and to forgive, we will change. We will transform. And some of you, I've seen just in the short time I've been at this church and working with this ministry, I look at you and I go like, wow, you're different. That is so cool. Barry Hardy's a good example. First time I met Barry a couple of years ago, he was very fearful of coming out of his shell and letting the world know that he struggled with, that he had HIV and hepatitis and hep C. Well, not only has he changed and grown spiritually, but God's changing him physically. Do you want me to tell your news? Can I? Please. Barry just got blood work and got the results today. Is that right? Yesterday? Today? Yesterday. He is free of hepatitis C. It's like a miracle. Two years ago, his liver counts, all the indicators were looking bad. It looked like he was not responding to the treatments. And kind of was told to get his house in order. In fact, he was telling me he went to Pastor Keith to talk about donating his piano to the church. He was ready to cash it in 2 years ago because it looked very grim. But God had other plans. And today, sorry, Barry, you can't be in the 3H club anymore, I guess. But I'm telling you, for every one of us in this room, whether it's a huge change or a little change, if you can see just the slightest progress in your life, you can begin to have hope that the life that came into that stable and that manger really is alive in you, growing little by little. And there are big stretches in Jesus' life. We don't know what's going on. From 0 to 12, we have no clue. From 12 to 30, you know, there's a lot of time when whatever changes were going on in him seemed invisible. But when he showed up again, it was clear he had grown. Something was more solid and strong in him. And so wherever you are in your journey, think about where you were 2 years ago, 4 years ago, 5 years ago. Think about where you were yesterday and where you are today. And if you feel like you haven't even started the journey, let this be an encouragement to you. Let's watch the video and then we'll continue in a moment.
Hey, this is Brandon Heath. I would love to share a little bit about my new song, I'm Not Who I Was. Really, it was just a normal day. I was going through some photographs in an old shoebox that I found. And I found a photo of somebody that I haven't seen in a long time. And really, just seeing the person in the photo, it brought up some pain and some unforgiveness that I had, to be honest with you. And I thought I was rid of it, and I wasn't. And I guess in kind of a courageous move, I laid the photo down on my dining room table And as any songwriter would, I wrote a song, almost like a letter, just saying, I forgive you. And, you know, I wasn't sure that I ever wanted to share this song, but as I have, so many people have responded and have shared their stories. I'd love for you to take a look at some of my friends. They're real people with real issues, and their honesty proves how the Lord has really moved in their lives.
I wish you could see me now. I wish I could show you how I'm not who I was. I used to be mad at you, a little on the hurt side too, but I'm not who I was. I found my way around to forgiving you some time ago, but I never got to tell you. In a photograph, I saw me and I had to laugh. You know I'm not who I was. You were there, you were right above me, and I wonder if you ever loved me just for who I was. When the pain came back again, like a bitter friend, it was all that I could do to keep myself from blaming you. Thinking it's a funny thing, I figured out I can sing. Now I'm not who I was. I write about love and such, because I wanted so much. I'm not who I was. I was thinking maybe I should let you know that I am not the same, but I never did forget your name. Hello. Amazing grace is the chance to give it out. Maybe that's what love is all about. I wish you could see me now. I wish I could show you how I'm not who I was.
You know, it took a lot of courage to write this song, and I know that it probably took a lot of courage for these people to share some of the things that may be harder in their lives. But God is so great, and He loves us so well and perfectly. I think one of the lines that is probably the most important line in the whole song is, the thing I find most amazing and amazing grace is the chance to give it out. And I believe that Christ loved us so that we would love others. And I hope that you can hear that in this song, and that you are inspired to go and to love well.
The thing that's so amazing about amazing grace is the chance to give it out. Maybe that's what love is all about. It's good, isn't it? As I said before, it's important to come here for yourself. It's important to show up hungry, needy, thirsty, wanting something to sustain you, to lift you up. But I also want you to come with that desire to bless and be a blessing, to give out of your own experience, your hope, your knowledge of what God has done in your life. That inspires me like nothing else. When I come here on Tuesday evening and sit in a support group and hear someone say, God showed up for me this week. I found a new way to relate to my child. I found a new way to relate to my spouse so that I'm not at the mercy of the roller coaster. I found out that I can trust God with my finances. Whatever the step, whatever the opportunity that we have to share God's grace in our lives, that's what it's about. Jesus said it this way in James. It says that Jesus said, it is more blessed to give than to receive. Well, blessed, as many of you know, is the word that starts the Beatitudes. But it doesn't mean blessed. It means happy. It means prosperous. It means a sense of fulfillment. It means almost like bliss. It's what Jesus is saying. There's more pleasure in giving than receiving. And at this time of year, some of us really know that. Some of you have already been giving through Angel Tree or the Hunger and Homeless Ministry. But I want to encourage you, if you're not experiencing the pleasure of giving, sign up. Do something to be the light in dark places. Sunday evening, I went to visit the son of a longtime friend. He's in Montgomery County Jail for drug-related charges. And a week ago Friday, his father took his own life in a motel room near Dallas. I had gone with his mother the last week to deliver the news. After signing in Sunday evening, I waited in a small concrete block cubicle, and it was painted stark white. I sat on a cold, round, stainless steel seat, which swung out from the wall on a hinged pipe. Phone receiver dangled from the wall about a foot above the little ledge where my hands rested. And I stared through this cloudy glass at the door, metal door, which barely 3 feet on the other side of the glass, awaiting his arrival. The fluorescent light overhead just kind of put everything in kind of a pale green light. And though it wasn't long, the minutes really drug by in that place. It felt really cold and really dark, even though it was brightly lit. There was no beauty, no diversion. And I caught just a glimpse of how long the days would be in a place like that. And I thought, where is God in this? I sat there and started singing Christmas carols to pass the time. Eventually, the 25-year-old young man appeared with bright eyes and a big smile. "How are you?" he asked. And before I even could formulate a response, he said, "Thanks for coming." We spoke for a while, and I told him what I knew about the service that they had had for his father on Thursday up in Plano, and told him that my wife, Terry, had gone to be there for his mom and his sister. I asked him how he felt. He told me that at age 13, he had pretty much given up on his dad. His parents split up when he was two, and he remembered the years of wishing for his dad to send a birthday card or write a letter. They never came. He remembered the summers when he stayed with his father when the man would get drunk and beat his son and daughter. He remembered praying for him to change, but he never did. I remarked how glad I was that he was not like his father in those ways. He agreed, but then he said he realized now that he had made some of the same bad choices and that being in prison made him unavailable to his own two sons. They were separated from their father like he was from his. I nodded, understanding. "Do you write them?" I asked. "Every week," he said. He shared with me how he awakens every morning in the prison, thanking God for another day of life, and how reading his Bible is about the only escape he has from the drudgery and darkness of the life in prison. He believes that God has him there to help him get his focus on him, to gain sobriety and get his life on a better track. I admire his attitude, and I was encouraged by his determination. He thanked me again for coming and told me to give his love to his mother. I asked if I could pray with him, and he said he was happy for me to do so. I put my hand on the glass, and he raised his to meet it. After we said goodbye, I punched 2154 on the phone in the hallway to let them know our visit was complete, and I walked to the end of the hall and heard it click as the lock on the heavy metal door released to allow my exit. I walked outside thanking God I was free to leave. Got in my car and just sat there. Before I drove away to my comfortable home, I realized that I had found God in Montgomery County Jail. He was in that young man I visited. He was there in every soul that claims God as Father and Jesus as brother. It was only my need to behold, to see Jesus in him. And fortunately, even in his pain of losing his father, being separated from his boys and his mom, being in a cold, dark place, he's found Jesus there too, in a very real way. So whether it's a stable or a prison cell, Jesus will show up. Jesus will be there for all of us when we open our eyes. We have to realize that it's up to us to behold. But even when we show up in our very best way, like Jesus did in this manger, there are going to be a lot of people who are going to look the other way, who are not going to see, who are not going to honor the presence of Christ in you. But if you have the heart of Mary, the heart of Joseph, the heart of the shepherd, the heart of the wise man, you can treasure Jesus and have joy even in the worst situation, even when those around you don't recognize it.
Let's pray. God, we thank you for mercy. We thank you for grace. We ask that you open our hearts toward you, that you transform us and make us more like Jesus. We ask in his name. Amen.